This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
We're back to some basics. Consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something. I can really do this.
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples, football analyst for BowlDigest.com. Today in the program, we're going to look a little bit at the Florida State defense and evaluate some of the struggles we've seen so far, in particular what we saw last week against Boston College. We're also going to preview the Maryland game with a chat with Rachel Klein from TurtleSportsReport.com, the Scout.com affiliate for Maryland football. And we're also going to take a brief look at Florida State recruiting toward the end of the program and make our assessment, our prediction for what we expect on Saturday. So let's get right to segment one, where we're going to talk about the Florida State defense so far this year. Okay, in this segment, we're going to talk a little bit about the Florida State defense. And you know, there's been a lot of concern over since the Boston College game, where Boston College was able to put up 34 points, was able to move the ball a little bit, especially early in the game, scored, you know, went out 17-3 in the first quarter. And you know, there's been some concern that Jeremy Pruitt's system isn't sticking at this point, and that you know, maybe some players are not being played in position. You know, all sorts of the standard kinds of concerns that you have when you give up more points than you should have to a team that really hasn't been very good on offense so far in the year. But to be honest, I'm not all that concerned yet about this defense. It's more or less an issue of there are good problems to have, and then there are bad problems to have. There's things to really be worried about, and then there's things that are really not as big of a concern in terms of the long haul. And most of what I saw against Boston College was really of the latter variety. It's stuff that, you know, is not all that concerning to me over the long haul. I mean, there's different kinds of mistakes. There's different kinds of ways to get beat. And what I saw against Boston College was a team that came off a bye. And actually, I'm very impressed with Boston College's, with their coaching staff, with the job that Steve Adazio and company are doing up there. They had a great plan. They came in and they had evaluated very well what Florida State had not done so far in the year on defense. You know, just like last year, Florida State was not as good against the power run game inside, in between the tackles, as really they should have been, especially given the defensive tackle bodies that Florida State has. Last year, they weren't actually all that good at stopping the run in those cases, and that was actually a big factor in the loss against Florida, where Florida came into that game and was able to go with some unbalanced sets, with some jumbo sets and things like that, and really push the ball down Florida State's throat at times. And to those who had watched Florida State play a good bit over the course of the year, that wasn't actually that surprising. What was surprising last year is that Stoops didn't make any adjustments to what Florida did on those unbalanced sets and so on, and just really stuck with the cover two shell and being one short in the box and these sorts of things, and really, you know, relied on the bodies that he had on that front seven to be able to get those stops. And over the course of the game, they eventually ran out of gas, and Florida was able to overpower them, in particular in the fourth quarter. Against Boston College, they went back to a lot of the same type of stuff. They brought out some unbalanced sets. They brought out you know, a lot of sets that forced Florida State to do some things, to react to things that they hadn't seen from other opponents, and they hadn't worked on over the course of the week in terms of the way that. You know, in terms of repping that stuff out, in terms of knowing where to be, what gap you're responsible for. They created some confusion early on. There were some major missed assignments in terms of where people were supposed to be, and Florida State got gapped a few times in the running game, and that makes a big difference. And then, you know, they also you know, did some things in the passing game with some throwbacks and so on that, again, they hadn't really shown, and Florida State wasn't real disciplined in the secondary on some of those things. But to be honest, it's the sort of thing that you would like a Boston College to expose, because you can get a chance to really cover that with your defense and rep through that a few times so that doesn't happen again. What was impressive and what was encouraging to me was how quickly the Florida State defensive staff actually adjusted on the fly and, you know, dealt with where guys were supposed to be, got alignment corrected, and were able to get to match up then with some of those unbalanced sets and so on. Very much the opposite of what you saw against Florida last year, where they more or less stayed with what they were doing. And this year you saw them, you know, basically go through an entire week's worth of preparation in that first quarter and then really lock things down for that 35-3 run, over the next two quarters before, honestly, it seemed like, they started losing interest a little bit. And that sort of motivation thing is something that this team's going to have to work on, in terms of playing a full four quarters. But in terms of the things that, you know, would be concerning, you know, the biggest problems against Boston College, you know, wasn't talent. It wasn't a lack of motivation, in some cases. For the most part, it was dealing with things that were a little bit new. And then Boston College picking out, a few things, that picked at some holes and exposed some things that I think can be fixed. Another aspect to this is, you know, if you look at those throwbacks, if you look at some of the success that they had in the passing game, Boston College again did a very good job of attacking the sort of thing that you would expect to be a weakness of a team in its first year, in a pattern reading defensive system. So Florida State does a lot of pattern reading. What that means is that each defensive back is going to be, reading the releases of the receivers off the line of scrimmage. So the outside corner, will actually have to not only be over top of his guy and take a look at what the guy that's lined up opposite him is doing. He's also reading that inside receiver's release. And how he covers the outside receiver is going to depend in part on what that inside receiver does. So if the inside receiver releases vertically, then he may have a vertical responsibility. Whereas if that inside receiver releases outside, then suddenly he knows that he's actually going to swap responsibilities with the inside guy, with the safety, who might actually end up responsible for the outside receiver. So it's zone with man principles, and you change where you're going to go based on releases. And, you know, one of the things that they were able to do is they were able to attack sort of the over-aggressiveness of the Florida State secondary, which, you know, in trying to make those reads and so on, there are a few cases where they didn't read the inside guy, or they didn't read the number three guy who may be in the backfield, or the tight end, that outside guy wasn't conscious of where he was supposed to be. So he would follow, he would chase his guy, the guy that was lined up over him inside, leaving that space open on the outside for a throwback and that sort of thing. And it's just over aggressiveness and not having your eyes where they're supposed to be. You're supposed to be looking at that inside guy to see where his release is. And if he stays on your side, you're supposed to stay back, and communicate with the rest of the secondary. And those are things that, you know, just, it takes a little bit of time to adjust to in this sort of system. And this is precisely the sort of thing that you would expect. You know, we talked, early in the season about how this defense by the end of the season may wind up better than the very good Mark Stoops defenses of the last couple of years. But it would take a little bit of time to get there, and that they would give up some plays, in terms of, you know, missing an assignment here or there, having a coverage bust, and most of those would be of the underneath or intermediate variety, which is exactly what Boston College was able to do, and then they were able to make some big plays out of it, you know, in terms of, you know, these throwbacks and that sort of thing, where there wasn't a whole lot of support on that side of the field. But, you know, those are the kinds of mistakes that you can live with at this point, so long as they don't continue over to the next week and then the next week and the next week. It's the sort of thing you expect to get fixed. So, you know, honestly, for Florida State fans, the majority of what we saw, that shouldn't be, you know, that stuff shouldn't be concerning. The other major factor outside of some of the just scheme stuff and missing some checks and some reads and not getting your eyes where you're supposed to go. And I think that this is another thing that was, again, it was there a little bit last year. The other thing that was a real factor is that there were times, especially in the first half, where the defensive front, you had guys trying to run under blocks. You had guys trying to get too much penetration and create plays in the backfield and opening up gaps. And you can't open up gaps against it, against a run scheme like what Boston College does, or, you know, by the time that you, you know, would potentially be in position to make the play, the back's already through the hole. You just, the goal has to be to compress the space and force those guys to, you know, spill the run to the outside, things like that. And it wasn't until really the second quarter that you started seeing guys take on blocks properly and really step down and compress the space, so that Boston College, the amount of running room that they had was decreased. And some of that is, I think, the result of a little bit different philosophy in how the defensive front is employed by Jeremy Pruitt, as opposed to what Mark Stoops did last year. I mean, Stoops definitely did do a good bit of being a guy short in the box, you know, only playing with seven up front and having at least one guy two gap. That means he's supposed to take on a blocker and he's responsible actually for the gap on each side of the blocker, as opposed to your more, you know, standard one gap scheme that you see more often now, where, you know, each guy is responsible for one gap. And the difference with a two-gap responsibility is that guy that's responsible for two gaps actually cannot be over-aggressive in terms of penetrating into the backfield, because if he does that, he's going to open up one of the two gaps that he's responsible for. What he actually has to do is overpower his blocker. He has to take control of his blocker and beat his blocker and then be ready to shed one way or another, depending on where the ball goes. So, you know, if the ball is going to go to the left, then you shed the blocker so that you can go, you know, to the left and meet the ball. What you saw against the Boston College front is that there were times where some of the Florida State defensive linemen and linebackers would choose one gap over another, and they'd leave their other gap open. Or they would run under a block and they would leave a gap open as a result of it. And if you're not taking those blocks on with the proper shoulder, or with, you know, taking them on head up, if you're a two gap guy, that's where you open up those gaps. And that lack of gap integrity is going to gouge you against a team with a running back who can make proper reads and so on. So that's actually, you know, maybe the bigger concern. That you've got to see some improvement this week against Maryland, and in particular, you know, it better be better by the time you get to Clemson. You've got to be better in gap integrity and maintaining your gap responsibility. But again, I think that's somewhat of a difference in terms of, you know, last year you had a little bit more of an emphasis on getting defensive linemen into the backfield than what you have this year. And this year, those defensive linemen are often responsible simply for tying those offensive linemen up and putting themselves in a position where they can shed one side or another while letting the linebackers make some plays. So, you know, it's a little bit of a difference in how they're employing things, how they're actually rolling some things out, what expectations they have for the defensive line. And I thought that as the game went on, up until the fourth quarter, where I felt like there was a little bit of regression again, for the most part, in the second and third quarters, the Florida State defensive line did a very good job of actually maintaining their gap responsibility, taking on those blocks. They did a much better job than they had done early on and squeezing things down. And when you've got guys with the size of your Eddie Goldmans, of your Timmy Jernigans, these guys, you can do that sort of two-gap stuff and be very effective. I mean, it's the same thing that Alabama has done with their big defensive lines over the past few years. And what it does is it gives you extra numbers in the passing game. It gives you a little bit more flexibility in terms of what you can do in the blitz game. Now, actually, I thought Goldman played the best game I've seen him play in a Florida State uniform. I thought he was actually very good in the second and third quarters. He was very difficult to block. I also think, though, that Jacoby McDaniel has essentially earned playing time over Niall Lawrence Stample, who throughout the game did not play nearly as well as should be expected from a deep defensive tackle crew. So I think you should see more Jacoby McDaniel moving forward. He did a great job taking on blocks. One of the better games actually he's played in a Florida State uniform. The other real concern, the one concern I think Florida State fans should have at this point about this defense, is the lack of instinctiveness showed by Christian Jones, and to some extent, the lack of bulk that you see from Telvin Smith, where he at times all too often ends up running under blocks. But, you know, you have to, in this kind of scheme, those two inside linebackers have to be able to make some plays and get, and make tackles, make the proper read and make tackles, take things on with the proper shoulder. And there were times in this game where they just didn't do a very good job of that. I would be very, if I were Jeremy Pruitt, I would be considering playing Christian Jones more at the outside linebacker sort of slash defensive end position in that, sort of 5-2-3-4 type thing that they're throwing out there in the base packages, and having him rush the passer a little bit more out of even fronts. He just seems to be better moving forward than diagnosing things. And it'll be interesting to see how they work that out moving forward, or if he's able to show some improvement if they leave him where he is. But overall, I felt like the defense actually made some progress over the course of this game, and I think Florida State fans should be largely encouraged by the kinds of adjustments that they saw from the defensive staff. The secondary is still outstanding. The loss of Tyler Hunter, who I'm told should be out for a few more weeks. They're still looking at second opinions and so on, but from what I understand, it shouldn't be a season-ending issue. The loss of Tyler Hunter does hurt a little bit against the run, and it also hurts a little bit in terms of the flexibility of getting Jalen Ramsey a little bigger corner out on the edge. But you do have with Ramsey a guy who can cover and can cover a lot of ground. It makes it, you know, Florida State actually a little bit more athletic in the secondary. But I think that you're looking at a defense that should be, by the end of the season, a top 5 or top 10 defense. And then you pair that with what, as far as I'm concerned, as long as Winston continues to progress, is probably a top 3 to 5 offense. This is a very dangerous team. The special teams situations that the miscues that we saw against Boston College are again, they're very fixable. They're the sorts of things that you're going to see in a game or two over the course of the year and should be able to get fixed by some extra attention and practice. But, you know, when you have a kicker that's as solid as Aguayo, you don't worry as much about some of the special team stuff, in particular against kickoff return. I mean, if they continue to have problems there, they'll just have them kick it out of the end zone. So, you know, I think moving forward, there's not a whole lot to be concerned about. The thing that we should look for against Maryland here is to see whether or not they do a better job in gap control, taking on blocks, and limiting the run game. I do think that this defense is better against a spread set, and they're better in the nickel and dime packages. They're better. Actually, Nate Andrews looks quite good, in particular for a true freshman in the money role. They look better when they've got extra defensive backs on the field, and that's what you're going to see the next couple weeks. You're going to see Maryland try to spread things out and run and throw from that. Clemson obviously is a spread team, and I feel like that's the sort of thing that actually does play into this defense's hands in terms of what they do well. When they go to a little bit smaller package and they're able to put that speed, those defensive backs on the field, they all, you know, those guys are really learning this system. They're starting to get a sense of where they're supposed to be. And I think by the time you get to Clemson, you know, Maryland's a very good team to have right before Clemson because of how much they do that's very similar to what Clemson does out of their, you know, their spread option packages and the jet sweeps and the ways that they want to get the ball to Diggs, these sorts of things. It's a very good opportunity to really spend 3 weeks against, working against the sorts of things that Clemson likes to do on offense. So I think that things set up very well. They continue to set up very well in terms of, what to expect from this defense. I think you should see over the next two games, you should see some major improvement. If you don't, obviously, then that's going to be bad against bad against Clemson. But if you don't, then, you know, that tells you, I think, a little bit more. I think we're going to find out a lot about Florida State in the rain against Maryland this week, where we're going to see whether or not some of those lessons, some of those things that should be easily fixed in terms of coaching, actually get corrected over the course of this next week. And if they do, then I think things look very good moving forward into the Maryland game. So we're going to move into the next segment now, where we're going to talk to Rachel Klein from TurtleSportsReport.com, and we're going to start previewing the Maryland game and discussing a little bit of what to expect there. Be back in a moment. Okay, now joining us on the podcast is Rachel Klein with TurtleSportsReport.com. Thanks for joining us, Rachel.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
So let's go ahead and pick it up with talking about a few key matchups, or you know, a few things that you think might be real key in this game. So what do you have in mind? What might you give an idea of a few things to look for from the Maryland side of things?
Well, you know, for FSU, everyone's talking about Famous Jameis. Well, our version of Famous Jameis is Stephon Diggs. Can you dig it? but Stephon is a pretty electric wide receiver, and he's going to be probably matched up against LaMarcus Joyner, I'm assuming, who's Florida State's, you know, best cornerback. And Stephon has had an interesting year. He had a career high against in one game, and then the next game, you know, had less than 50 yards receiving. So it's been kind of an up and down season for him. And I think he's still adjusting to kind of having to share catches because there are more threats this year on the offense. But I definitely think that is going to be an interesting matchup because he's kind of Maryland's dynamic playmaker that everyone had their eyes on headed into the season. So Stephon is obviously an explosive player, and he has a lot of personality. I think if Stephon is dominating that matchup, it'll give the offense a lot of confidence. And with him, you know, he can really get things going because he's not really a downfield threat. He's more of a guy who can, you know, catch it on a quick slant or something, and he can pick up a lot of yards after the catch. So it's not like C.J. Brown is going to be throwing long bombs to him, you know, in the end zone, and that's all Maryland has to rely on. It's, you know, he can kind of get things going, pick up yards here and there, and then do his thing after the catch. So I think he definitely has a lot of the personality of the offense in him, but then again, Maryland's just proven this year that they do have a variety of options when it comes to their offense, so it almost makes him even better that it's not all on his shoulders this year.
Yeah, I've noticed that actually Deion Long is actually leading the team in receptions, although not in yardage. I mean, he's only averaging 12.9 yards a catch, as opposed to Diggs, who's, you know, averaging an absurd 22+. But can you tell us a little bit about what to expect in terms of Deion Long and exactly what he offers in that passing game? Is he more the guy that they're going to go a little bit more downfield to, or exactly how are they using him?
Well, his name says it all. He's the long ball. You know, he's like, they're going to throw the long ball to him. He's definitely, you know, bringing him in. He is so quick and he is so explosive. Sometimes it just doesn't even look like he's, you know, really running his route off the line. And all of a sudden he just flips the switch and he's 20 yards ahead of the cornerback trying to defend him. He's definitely the downfield threat that can kind of stretch things out. And the thing that he does is that he makes the defense stay true. So, I mean, if they're not, you know, keeping their eyes on him, Maryland can definitely throw the ball up to him and he can pick up yards that way. But then you also have Stephon Diggs kind of in that mid-range. So the two of them are complementing each other very, very well on offense, but he's definitely going to be more of the long ball guy.
So in terms of the running game, what really can Florida State fans expect in terms of the way that Maryland is going to try to attack the defense? What exactly are they doing this year that might give Florida State some problems?
Well, I think against BC, Florida State seemed to struggle when BC was moving laterally, and Maryland does do a lot of the zone read stuff and the option, you know, where Brandon Ross will be running with C.J. Brown, and if the back bites, he's going to pitch it to Brown, or he has the ability to take it himself. And I think that when, at least against Boston College, it looked like Florida State was getting spread out a little bit, it was easier for BC to attack them when they kind of got stretched more, as opposed to your traditional run blocking off the line. So I think that Maryland has that ability as well. With the option, and C.J. Brown is definitely a dual threat quarterback. He's proven it this year. Teams have forced him to throw and teams have forced him to run, and he's proven that he can do both. Brandon Ross, he struggled in the first game and he's been a little bit inconsistent, but I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the Maryland's line is the glaring weakness that I feel like is being overlooked on this team. So he's really had to make adjustments at the line of scrimmage and find where his openings are and hit them hard, because he was kind of dancing, I think, being a little indecisive earlier in the year. But if he gets into a rhythm and figures out what gaps he wants to hit, then when he hits them with a decisive, you know, power, he can really pick up some meaningful yards.
So obviously the last place that you want to be weak coming into a game against a team like Florida State is up front. So you know that. Obviously, is something that Florida State fans will be happy to hear in terms of where a weakness would be. Although, frankly, Florida State this year has not, one of their weaknesses so far, they've not been as stout against the run at the defensive tackle position, and there's been some concern on the Florida State staff about where they're at in terms of defensive ends. I mean, they feel like they've got a pretty good one, but young in Mario Edwards, but. At the same point, they really don't trust their ends at this point in the season. So it'll be interesting to sort of see that matchup between the two, where you've got a strength that hasn't been quite maybe as good as it should have been so far this year for Florida State, and then a definite weakness on the edge versus what has been a weakness for Maryland. Go ahead.
I was going to agree with you. I think that Maryland is very similar. Well, I guess Florida State and Maryland both lost a lot off their defenses, those big name guys. And it's been interesting. Maryland has actually their defense has gotten better somehow. They have a lot of guys who are playing with a chip on their shoulder. I think that we're just biding their time, and they got a lot of experience behind some of those big name players that left. But as opposed to, how you said Florida State's defense is still kind of developing, Maryland's defense has really been a strong suit for them.
Yeah, and I'm looking at some of the splits. Is there any concern? One of the things that I've noticed in terms of Maryland's offensive numbers is, all told, they're averaging about 7 yards a play, which is actually very good. That's up there. Where is that? Maryland's number 14 in the country right now in terms of yards per play, at 7.05 yards per play, which is pretty good. But one of the things that I noticed here is that's over eight yards a play, 8.31 yards a play at home, but only 5.81 yards per play on the road. And of course that road game, and that, they've only played one road game, but that was at Connecticut, and it was a game where really that was the worst that Maryland has played so far. Is there any concern sort of within the program about, what it's going to be like really to play on the road in this one, given the disparity between what you've got in those games on the road and what you've got in terms of the numbers at home?
Well, you can't really – you don't get a straight answer if you, ask – the coaching staff, because it's not, they have the mindset of we're focused on ourselves. We're not going to, it's another game. If it's a road game, it's a game, So if you ask them the concern inside the program, they might be concerned about it, but they're not really letting it out. I think it is a concern, and I'm sure they would agree. I know they have been preparing for the crowd noise. They've been pumping music in to the stadium behind the benches at practice. And I talked to Brandon Ross this week, and he said it was so loud. He couldn't even hear himself think. He said he's played in loud stadiums before, and he thought that they were overdoing it a little bit. But nonetheless, they are preparing for that. And I do think that playing on the road will be, I think it'll prove difficult, because like you said, against UConn, it wasn't looking good early for them. But the one key thing in all of their games when they haven't been clicking early is the defense. The defense has really been the biggest factor that kind of gets them over that early hump that gets them into the game. And then the offense kind of goes into automatic mode and it picks up and gets back to where it usually is. But That being said, Maryland's going on the road to Florida State. It's going to rain. It's supposed to be rainy and windy. So if Maryland gets down, it's going to be hard for them to come back.
Yeah, in terms of the rain and the wind, you know, that being a big factor with, you know, what might actually be a Category 1 hurricane in the panhandle by then. What have you gotten any idea of, you know, sort of how they plan to attack that, you know, whether they're of the philosophy of, you know, run the ball a little bit more when it's bad weather, or you know, are they going to be one of those teams that still tries to basically to run what they normally run? I mean, you've got different schools of thought on this. You know, Jimbo Fisher at Florida State tends to, as long as he's got a quarterback he trusts, they're still going to run the same stuff in the wind and the rain for the most part. Is that more or less the sense that you get from Edsel, or are they going to, you know, if it ends up being really nasty or whatever, you think they're going to run it a little bit more? I mean, what's the mindset there?
So Maryland played West Virginia at M&T Bank Stadium, which is where the Ravens play, and it was pouring. I mean, torrential downpour, and they still threw the ball a lot. I was waiting for them to kind of, and Maryland was up. Maryland won that game 37-0. So, you know, I was waiting for him to take the starters out for like further into the game, him to stop throwing the ball as much. But I mean, it was just full steam ahead. They weren't going to compromise what they were doing because of the weather. So, you know, Maryland's still going to be a balanced team. I definitely think that they, if they can throw it, I think that might be the preference, just because the running game hasn't been as solid unless it's really been in C.J. Brown's hands.
Okay, so transitioning then also to the defensive side of the ball for Maryland. Obviously, you guys have had a lot of success on defense in terms of the pass rush. So, can you tell us a little bit more about what Maryland has been doing, and sort of, you know, who Florida State fans should look for and what they should be looking at in terms of the pass rush and how Maryland's been playing on defense?
Yeah, Maryland's defense, it lost six of their seven starters from last season. They only had one returning starter, their nose tackle, Darius Kilgo, yet the defense has improved tenfold. The defense is ranked or tied for first in the country in sacks with 17, and they had six in one game against Connecticut. So the pass rush has been a key part of Maryland's effectiveness on the defensive side of the ball. Two names to watch out for right now: Marcus Whitfield and Yannick Cujo-Virgil. He is not, that's three names, so I guess, you know, but two people. They're definitely the ones leading the charge. And every time Yannick Cujo-Virgil is on the field, he is just trying to go after the quarterback. Some other guys that are also getting there are Darius Kilgo, Keith Bowers, and Quinton Jefferson. And Quinton Jefferson is, he hasn't had the numbers, I guess, that Marcus Whitfield and Yannick Cujo-Virgil is, but he has the motor. He's a young guy that really stepped up this preseason. During one spring practice, one of the coaches had to yell at him because he almost sacked Maryland's quarterback. And if you know anything about Maryland, you know that they lost four of those last year. So the coach said, "Do you really want a linebacker back at quarterback? Don't hit him again." So it was, he likes to hit the quarterback. I'll just put it that way.
So looking at Cujo-Virgil and Whitfield, I mean, these guys, they're both about 250 pounds. They're both, you know, they're sort of similar. Similar guys. They're both, you know, more or less outside linebackers. What kind of players are they in the pass rush? I'm assuming they've been doing most of their damage with speed rushes. I mean, what kind of stuff has Maryland been doing to sort of set them up, you know, put them on the edge? You know, can you tell us a little bit about sort of what Maryland's been doing, on that front and how they go about getting to the quarterback?
Well, Maryland uses a lot of odd fronts and they, I mean, Yannick is a bull, like he bull rushes off the line. You know, he's just, you know, he's got a nose for getting the quarterback down and Whitfield as well, but they disguise their blitzes a lot. So, you know, sometimes, a lot of times if they're in a nickel package, like they've been in the nickel and the dime, a lot of times they'll blitz you know the nickelback or sometimes they'll do a safety blitz. The thing is, Maryland's had some changes in the secondary, so some of those guys who were coming off those blitzes, like Dexter McDougal, who was a safety, you know, he was doing a lot of that stuff. He is actually injured, not playing anymore. So they're using a lot of different ways to bring down the quarterback, which is, I guess, a short way of answering your question. But you can't really sum it up in concisely because they are using so many different tactics to bring guys down.
I guess that does match up with what quarterback Jameis Winston did say earlier this week that based on what they've been looking at on tape, Maryland, he said Maryland brought more different variations of blitzes than they've seen from anybody else, you know, all the other teams they played combined this year. So I guess that does sort of validate what Winston was saying there in terms of the way that that Maryland's been coming after the quarterback with all sorts of different disguise and so on, which quite honestly was in fall camp, in summer camp at Florida State. That was one of the concerns actually early on. And actually through most of camp was whether Winston, was how Winston responded to the blitz. There were times where he got over aggressive, and threw balls into coverage. There were times where he didn't always recognize exactly, you know, where people were coming from. And so that's probably still going to be a concern going into this one in terms of the way that Maryland plays defense, where Winston really has to, you know, that's a place where the quarterback has to identify who's coming. You know, you can't not know in these cases. So that'll be an interesting matchup.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's been really interesting is that it's the secondary's had a lot of changes. Like I said, they've lost a lot of their veterans. Jeremiah Johnson, both of their starting corners from the beginning of the year, are out, and so they have a true freshman starting, as well as Isaac Goins, who's a more experienced guy. But I definitely, you know, he wasn't the starter coming into the season. So whatever you want to make of that, they're both very talented. It's just they've gotten a lot of help off of the fact that Maryland is putting so much pressure on the quarterback. It's making their jobs a little bit easier because they're not having to lock down those receivers for so long. And they've definitely given credit to that pass rush for some of their, play this year. And Maryland's been able to pick the ball off a lot because they're sending pressure and because the quarterback is in a constant state of uncomfortableness, if that's a word. But that's their goal, is to never let him feel comfortable in that pocket.
All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to the next segment where we're going to flip the script a little bit, and Rachel is going to actually quiz me a little bit about things from the Florida State end as we continue to preview this weekend's Florida State-Maryland game. We will be back in a moment. We are back with the next segment. Rachel, I now turn it over to you. Ask away.
Well, first and foremost, my first question, of course, is about Famous Jameis. I mean, I feel like he's becoming this year's Johnny Manziel. How good is he? I know. I said this year's Johnny Manziel, so on the field. That doesn't include the offseason. So how good is Famous Jameis? Jameis Winston.
Well, I mean, I think you're really looking at a guy who he had as much hype coming into the year as anyone really could have, and has actually more than lived up to that hype, which, you know, really nobody could have expected anybody to live up to the kind of hype that he had. But he's been very good, and you know, he's still young. You're 4 or 5 games into the season, and you know, you still don't, if you're at Florida State, you still don't quite know what you have. I mean, you know that he's something special, that he's a rare player. But in terms of, you know, what to expect, I mean, this Maryland game is a game where, you know, I think Florida State is going to find out a lot more about Jameis as a quarterback. And in terms of, you know, playing a little bit higher level of defense, you know, last week, he responded very well, and they responded very well as an offense to getting down a little bit against Boston College, getting down, you know, 17, 17-3 early. And, you know, responded very well to that. But, you know, to be honest, it's still one of those things where, you know, there's still a work in progress. He still gets greedy at times. You know, still will throw the ball into coverage and trust his arm, a little bit more than what, Jimbo Fisher, you know, and the rest of the offensive staff will want. But really the thing that sticks out most about Jameis is he has just unusual, he has remarkable, intuition and anticipation. Sort of like that point guard who knows where the guy is going to be and throws, mm-hmm. you know, throws a guy open in basketball where, you know, you just see the guy make all sorts of no-look passes. He just knows where people are going to be. He sees plays develop before they happen. And Winston, in a lot of ways, that he approaches the position. He looks like a point guard playing quarterback where, you know, he throws very well with anticipation. He knows where a guy is going to be. He diagnoses things very quickly. And guys look a lot more open because Winston's throwing the football. And that, and I would say that in terms of that, that's something you really can't teach. I mean, that's something a guy has or he doesn't. The game either moves at that slower speed for somebody or it doesn't. And he's somebody that the game just moves at that slower pace. He sees where people are going to be before they're there. And that's something special regardless of the rest of it. I mean, obviously he's got the physical tools and everything, but that's where I think Winston is really special. The danger, of course, is when you play a defense that disguises, then, you know, you've got a guy who anticipates like that. You know, sometimes you might be able to play a game with him and, you know, see if you can bait him into throwing somewhere where he actually anticipates wrong. I mean, that's, I think, what Maryland's going to really want to do against him. But really, I mean, he's as good as you could ask for as a redshirt freshman.
And you know, with Maryland's pass rush being so aggressive and everything, I'm fumbling my words.
Hold on. Let's go ahead and restart that.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Besides Jameis Winston, how is Florida State's offensive line? Are they a strength? Do you think they can handle the pass rush as well?
I think this offensive line is probably the best offensive line Florida State has had in at least a decade. I would say maybe the 2003 offensive line would be the only one I can think of off the top of my head that would be somewhat comparable. I mean, last year's was very good as well, for the most part. But, they returned four starters. Bobby Hart is the fifth guy, that right tackle. And he's actually played very well. He's actually been, better than a couple of the returnees, so far. By and large, it's a veteran group and it's a group that's been very reliable. I mean, one of the reasons that Winston's had the success that he has in the first few weeks is because of that offensive line and because he can trust them to pick up guys where they're supposed to and trust them to make the right play in front of him. And so he doesn't have to think about a whole lot on that front or hasn't had to so far. I would definitely say that they're a strength on the offense. I mean, I don't know that this offense really has a whole lot of weaknesses, to be honest. I mean, there's some lack of depth in some places. The one concern, up front is at right guard. Trey Jackson has had some injury issues so far this year. He missed a couple games and, last week against Boston College, he didn't look quite as mobile, as he has been in the past. And, you know, when he's been healthy, he may actually be the best guy Florida State has on the offensive line. But he didn't look quite like himself last week. And so it's not clear that he's really at the point of health where he needs to be in order to be, a real dominant, right guard. And also, Cameron Irving at left tackle seems to be, there seems to be something nagging him as well. So there's a little bit of concern there. But I think both of those guys are still going to play at a high level. Again, this is a very interesting matchup. I mean, Boston College had four sacks last week. A couple of those were Winston holding on to the ball a little bit too long. And, you know, as a redshirt freshman sometimes does, and Winston readily admitted after the game, I mean, he was asked about his performance and he said, well, I need to check down better. I need to hit my check downs earlier. And that's been a flaw of his. And that actually will make that offensive line look a little bit worse because you got a guy that's holding on to it instead of getting rid of it to the guy that, you know, he's supposed to in the flat or, you know, on that little short bit because, you know, he's trying to make a play downfield.
I was going to ask about that because last week I saw, you know, he looks like he's just so flashy sometimes, you know, like he, it's not like he's trying to show off or anything, but it's like he hits the bomb pass, you know, it's the flashy pass, you know, and like the Hail Mary at the end of the half, things like that. And I wondered if, you know, he likes those big plays and that's more of what he looks for. And so if things aren't going right, will it be harder for him to get on track if he continues to look for those or, you know, if the weather is bad?
Yeah, you know, and if there's somebody that throws a better deep ball in the country than Jameis, I'd really like to see him. I mean, actually, Jacob Coker on the Florida State roster, the backup quarterback, might actually. But I haven't seen another starter throw a better deep ball than Jameis has. I mean, he's been on the money with those all year. But yeah, you're right. He does have a little bit of a love affair with the big play. He wants to make plays. He's out there, you know, he's the kind of guy who is out there to and he loves playing the game. He loves making big plays and he loves going for that dagger. And that's been a constant point of discussion between him and Randy Sanders, the quarterback's coach and Florida State, Florida State's obviously their head coach who also coaches quarterbacks, Jimbo Fisher, where they're constantly telling him, you know, you can't go broke taking a profit. And, you know, Jameis, just take the dump down, you know, take the check down. And he's, you know, there are times where he's really, you know, he's shown some improvement there. And then there are times where, you know, you can kind of see that he really wants to make that play. I mean, maybe the best play so far this year is an example of that, was, you know, a highlight touchdown that he had a couple weeks ago against Bethune-Cookman where, you know, a couple guys had him in the grasp in the backfield and, you know, he spins away and breaks a tackle and then makes a falling down pass, for a touchdown in the end zone to Kelvin Benjamin.
I'm sorry, I just had a Johnny Manziel flashback. What did you say?
Yeah, it's exactly right. I mean, but the funny thing about that play is, you know, for the touchdown and as spectacular as it was and everybody, you know, it's ESPN top, you know, top plays, whatever. In the film room, he got a minus for that play because he made the wrong read. You know, that play was, you know, they saw blitz. That's a Sam and Will blitz. And as soon as he sees that, he was supposed to go to the fullback in the flat and the fullback in the flat might have scored. I mean, if he hits him right away, he might have scored and it would have been a lot easier. So, you know, it's a good example of where sometimes, you know, he's so gifted that he can even do the wrong thing and get away with it. And that actually can kind of build bad habits. But, I think actually that's where.
That Hail Mary at the end of the half, those two touchdowns, you know, late in that second quarter, they kind of got them close enough back, you know, so they could have halftime to regroup. I felt like against Boston College. And get back on the right page. But I thought to myself, you know, I think Boston College exposed a lot of things and I'm sure Florida State's going to kind of look at like a loss, but I bet they're not looking at those plays that got them back in the game.
Oh, I'm sure they are. You know? Actually knowing Fisher and knowing the way that they've done that, I mean, they were actually talking about some of that stuff on the sideline on handling those situations better, even if you succeed. And that's one of the things that, you know, I know Edsel does this up at Maryland, and it's a big thing that Fisher is a stickler about is we're not going to look at results. So even if the play worked, if it worked for the wrong reason, then that counts against us, and we need to take that seriously. And Jameis has shown the willingness to be coached on that stuff, and that's the encouraging thing, I think, for Florida State fans, is that Jameis, after the game, wasn't enamored with himself for a couple of those big plays. He was kicking himself for not taking the checkdowns. And I think that's where, you know, actually the Boston College game in some ways might be the worst thing that could have happened for Maryland.
That's what I was, yeah.
In that,
I was,
you know,
thinking that they probably are treating it like a loss.
Yeah, in that, you know, you're looking at, you know, these guys.
It exposed a lot of holes.
Yeah, you're looking at, you know, Winston and some of these guys are looking at it and saying, well, against Maryland, we better not do that. So, you know, some of those places that might have been a slip, I think may not wind up that way. Against Maryland. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, the last thing you want if you're Maryland is for, you know, the sleeping bear to get poked a little bit right before you play, right?
So yeah.
I think that there might have been a little bit of that. But again, you can't be sure because you're dealing with a guy with only four games. You have no track record really to go on that. So again, it's riveting television. It's riveting.
It really is. And you know, I question, Maryland does look good, but, and it did help that West Virginia won last week. But they honestly haven't played an offensive line, I think, that has really challenged them. And I don't know that they've been – I think they could have used a Boston College game, like, before this one to tune up, because they're coming off a shutout against West Virginia in a bye week, and I know Maryland is definitely not satisfied being 4-0, but at the same time, you only – can scout yourself so much, you know, you can only do so much without it actually being exposed in a game and then knowing that it's a problem. So I think they're definitely, you were talking about Florida State's offensive line. Maryland's offensive line is comprised of the most makeshift group of guys. I mean, they have their right guard came in as a starting or a backup left, or he was a backup right tackle. He was moved to left tackle, and then he became the starting right guard. He's a walk-on redshirt freshman, by the way. So that's who Maryland has playing at right guard. And then at right tackle, Ryan Doyle is a former left tackle, a backup left tackle, who moved over to the right side and won that starting spot kind of by default. The other starter, who was very quickly losing grips on his starting spot, he broke his foot. So, you know, that ended the battle. But Maryland's offensive line is anything less than stellar. And I don't think that has been exposed as badly as it could be. I fear it could be.
Well, one of the things actually you mentioned, though, is that Maryland is coming off a bye. And it's one of the things that, you know, I think I know that the Florida State staff discussed after the game against Boston College last week. Boston College came out of the bye running some things that they hadn't showed all year. And that's one of the things actually that Maryland does bring into this game is coming off a bye. You're able to put some things in, and show some things that, you know, you haven't shown all year and potentially come out with, you know, with a couple of haymakers early and try to get, you know, that team off balance, especially when you're playing a team that, you know, is sort of your season to beat. So, you know, that's something that, again, you know, maybe it would have helped to have a sort of Boston College game, but at the same point, they're riding high confidence wise. And you're looking at coming off a bye week where you're as prepared as you can be, against a team that didn't have a bye. So, and a team that, you know, for all we know, I doubt it is the case, but, you know, Clemson is the next game.
Yeah.
For Florida State. I mean, they have a bye before that, so it really shouldn't be on their minds all that much, but you just never know. And I think byes actually matter quite a bit in that sense in terms of, you know, the early going. That's something to watch for, I think, in terms of that is, you know, bye weeks sort of go out the window. You know, the benefit of a bye week sort of, I think, disappears after about the first, you know, 8 or 10 minutes of the game. But that first 8 or 10 minutes, you can do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so that'll be interesting to see, although the weather may neutralize some of that. And if you can't win up front, then you're not going to win anyway. But
And C.J. Brown does do a lot to make up for that with a lot of quick drops. And he, like I said, he is a dual threat. He can run. So that, I think that's been their saving grace. I think the line has shored up enough that he's able to make something of nothing. So he's able to, he knows he's got to take quick drops. He can't stay in that pocket very long. So he knows kind of he's got a clock in his head. And I think sometimes that helps because, like you said, you know, sometimes I think Jameis Winston might hold on to the ball a little bit longer, you know, might be indecisive. C.J. Brown doesn't really have that luxury, so he's got to make his decision quick.
I just had a little bit of a few good men come through my head there. You have that luxury.
Yeah, but the thing about what you said coming off the bye and having some maybe things that aren't on tape, I really haven't gotten the feeling that Maryland has unleashed the full fury of what could be their offense. Because Stephon Diggs, I mean, he had a pedestrian career high against Connecticut. And, I mean, I wasn't even keeping track, and all of a sudden he had a career high. And same with Brandon Ross. It kind of almost seemed like it just happened in a couple plays. But, I mean, I think that they can really use that 1-2 combo with Long and Diggs in a way that will make your jaw drop. And I haven't seen it yet. So now that you bring that up, that's something definitely that could be unveiled come Saturday. So Maryland obviously has a lot of talented wide receivers, Stephon Diggs, Deion Long, but Florida State secondary, I know it'll be a tough matchup. How do you see them neutralizing all of those weapons, you know, between C.J. Brown, Deion Long, and Stephon Diggs? And they also have Nigel King, their third wide receiver, coming back, as well as Malcolm Coleman.
Well, I think actually the unfortunate thing for Maryland in this is I think Florida State is actually significantly better when they have more defensive backs on the field. They've got, including Tyler Hunter, who's out for this game, they've got about eight guys who really are going to – who are probably going to be first three or four round picks in the NFL draft at defensive back on the roster. So they've got a lot of depth there. And so they can play man, they can play zone. What I expect actually though is that they're not going to actually, you know, give one particular guy, you know, an assignment to, okay, well, you know, you just take Diggs, you know, all game, you follow him around. They're gonna just play their defense, and what they're doing this year with Jeremy Pruitt is they're spending a lot of time doing sort of zone defense with pattern matching concepts, where you know the aim is to sort of play zone with man principles, and so you're gonna see a lot of that. The thing that I think Diggs especially should expect is that they're gonna jam him. They're going to put a guy up over top of him, and they're going to try to take away that short stuff with, you know, by knocking him off his route. They've got a couple corners that are pretty big. PJ Williams is a little over 6'1", about 210 pounds. And then Jalen Ramsey, who's now starting at safety in place of Tyler Hunter, but he also will play some corner. He's a solid 6'2.5", maybe 6'3", and very, very long. So, you know, it's like basically, it's almost like a normal guy at 6'4", 6'5", in terms of length, and runs extremely well. And they'll put a guy like that over him and ask him to jam him, and then they'll have safety help over top if they need it. I expect them to play pretty physical with these receivers. What you'll see, Maryland is in a multi wide receiver sets, you know, a lot of spread stuff. You'll see LaMarcus Joyner actually slide into that slot corner a lot, and you know they'll blitz him a lot from in there. He's actually the best pass rusher on the team. It doesn't say much in terms of where some of the other pass rush Florida State has not had a great pass rush so far this year. Mm-hmm. But Joyner is probably the best pass rusher on the team from that slot corner position. They'll slide him in there. And they'll basically try to get, you know, also Darby is the other, you know, who's actually from up that way. Darby is the other major corner that they'll stick out there. And he ran 10-4, 10-3 in high school in the 100 meters, so nobody's going to outrun him. but, you know, he's another bigger kid. I mean, he's about 195, 200 pounds, about 5'11". And they'll ask him to come up and jam. So I figure that's going to be the plan. They're going to play physical with the receivers, and they're going to try to take away the shorter stuff and give the defensive line time to make some plays there, while still keeping some help over the top. Not wanting to give up some of those big plays. The problem that they had last week against Boston College was against some misdirection type stuff where, you know, they'd roll the pocket one way, they'd take all the action one way, and then they'd throw across the formation. And right now there's still an adjustment to Jeremy Pruitt's scheme, in terms of what he's asking them to do. There's a lot of checks at the line and a lot of, reads that need to be made based on, you know, if the inside receiver takes this stem and the outside receiver takes this stem, then you're supposed to do this. If they take these, you know, releases off the line, then you're supposed to do this. You know, there's a lot of those rules that you have to know and you have to have automatic, in order to do it well. In this defense, and you know, it's pretty clear that some of the guys are still thinking out there. Last week, they got a little over aggressive in terms of, you know, not really looking at their keys and trying to make plays. And Boston College exposed that. So it'll be interesting to see how that sort of plays out with what Maryland does with their receivers, because you know Maryland's going to try to do a lot of the same stuff. I mean, obviously, you see that on tape, and you want to see to sort of probe it yourself. Be interesting to see how they can kind of incorporate some things that will maybe take advantage of some of the rules that, you know, that the pattern matching rules that they know Florida State does. But like I said, I think the main thing is they're going to try to get physical. And they're gonna try to play right up on those receivers and make them uncomfortable, and take away that quick stuff with the jam. Now, you know, a guy like Diggs should be able to get off some jams. The question is whether or not you can make some big plays out of it.
The more we talk, it sounds like Maryland's weakest link is going up against Florida State's weakest link in their pass rush, and Maryland's line being their, you know, Achilles heel. And Florida State not having the best pass rush this year. So it'll be interesting because and then, you know, Florida State has receivers, Maryland got some talented cornerbacks, and same thing opposites, and they both have dual. I think it's kind of, it might come down to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a lot of ways you're right that, you know, it's strength on strength, weakness on weakness this week. I do think that probably the biggest sort of strength versus weakness does tilt Florida State's way in this game. And that's the offensive line for Florida State against the defensive line for Maryland, which I'm not quite sold on their ability to stop the Florida State running game, to be honest. And that's where, you know, Florida State has three very good backs, and I think they're going to run the football a little bit this week. That's where I think, you know, there's some advantages. And I think that probably is going to be where the game's decided. If Maryland's able to limit the Florida State running game, if they're able to hold them down a little bit, then I think Maryland puts themselves in a position where they may be able to win this game. But I'm just not sure they're going to be able to do that. I think that's where the biggest advantage is in terms of either team, is sort of Florida State up front and with their running backs against the Maryland defense, which I'm not sure they can. They're going to be physical enough and good enough against the run to ultimately win this one, especially on the road and with the kind of conditions that we're looking at this week.
It'll definitely be interesting. Maryland's never won at Florida State, and we'll have to see if Saturday can be a first.
Yep. All right. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. You know, best of luck to Maryland as they move forward in the Big Ten.
Either way, it should be a pretty good, pretty interesting game coming up on Saturday with two teams that, you know, have a lot of doubts about their early schedule, and they're going to find out a lot about themselves. All right, we're going to move into another segment with Rachel, where she's going to fill us in about some recruiting that involves both Maryland and Florida State. Well, Rachel, we're certainly not going to let you go until we bring up a certain top-rated offensive tackle prospect who both Florida State and Maryland fans are obviously interested in.
Damian Prince?
Damian Prince, exactly.
I actually was at Damian Prince's game last weekend, and so I spoke to Damian and his family as well and his coach. And Damian actually went down at halftime. He has a third-degree ankle sprain, so he'll miss the next 2 weeks. He didn't play in the second half of the game, and I spoke to him after the game. He was disappointed. He was standing on the sideline, you know, giving his coach the puppy dog eyes, kind of hoping that he would go back in. And Randy Etzel was at that game as well, so I think he was a little disappointed. But his team is 5-0 for the first time. His team's never been undefeated. And he's having they're having a great year. They have a new head coach. I talked to him after the game about where he is recruiting wise. And he said, you know, he's really focused on his high school season right now. He's still at a list of 10 schools. But he did say that, you know, he's hearing from coaches every week still, but the fact that he's able to have that face to face time with the Maryland coaches, you know, if he goes down to campus, he said, you know, he's been there numerous times over the past year and developed a really close relationship with them. So he did say that he feels really comfortable with them and likes them and trusts them. But, you know, with him, I definitely think I would not say that Maryland is a leader just because he's saying that. You know, I think that the one thing he did say was that trust and his relationship with the head coach is going to be a big factor. And I know that Florida, he has a great relationship with Florida State's offensive line coach. And if he likes his position coach, the head coach, you know, he said he's going to play harder for them, and that's going to be a key factor in his decision.
All right. Well, so, that obviously, you know, Florida State fans are very much hoping that they can get him. Maryland, that would be a huge addition going into the Big Ten.
And just for a timeline, he did say in 3 to 4 weeks he's gonna try and trim his list again. And I do think Florida State will make that next round of cuts, as will Maryland. Some people I feel like could maybe fall off that list. Vanderbilt, Rutgers, those are some of the ones I feel like might be closer to the 8, 9, 10 range, as opposed to Maryland, Florida State. He said he likes to watch Alabama. I'm sure they will probably remain up there, as well as Florida. So he did say he's going to trim in 3 to 4 weeks, and then official visits, he will either decide or take those in mid-November to early December.
Well, Rachel, that's certainly more than we could have asked for as far as an update on Damian Prince. Great information there. And Rachel Klein, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Should be a really interesting one come Saturday.
Definitely. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, that's going to do it for the Unconquered podcast for this week. Should be a very interesting game coming into the end of the weekend against Maryland. Should be very interesting to see whether the defense makes the corrections necessary and plays with the discipline that's going to be needed moving forward. Maryland offers a nice test. Should be, I would expect, about a 10 to 17 point win for Florida State in this game. Thanks to Rachel Nichols for her appearance. And on behalf of the rest of the Noll Digest staff, I'm Jason Staples. We'll see you again next week. I made this.